Aloha. Welcome to The Conversation. This is Catherine Cruz, Hawaii Talks. Today, we're gliding through a Hanaho show about one of the oldest and pluckiest instruments in history, the harp. Historical evidence dates them back to ancient Egypt and Mesopotamia at least 5,000 years ago. Here on the show, we shine the spotlight on a local harpist who retired from the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra after 44 years. We also dig in the vaults for an interview with a retired kalaupapa nurse whose healing harp touched many Hansen's disease patients. We hear how a Grammy-nominated jazz harpist is taking the classical instrument to new heights. And we discover some of the hidden gems of Hawaii Public Radio, talented staffers with shared roots in the Hawaii Youth Symphony. It's Aloha Friday, September 26th. The Conversation's Harp Hanaho Show starts after the headlines. Tune to The Conversation here on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Today, we are rebroadcasting stories featuring an instrument that doesn't often get the limelight. We're talking about the harp. We start with Kane Uejio, who retired as principal harpist for the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra this summer. Her lifelong devotion to her instrument spans decades. She's been recognized for her unwavering commitment to the harp, of which she owns about a half a dozen. All have names, and the ladies are her dear friends.
The harp I usually use with the orchestra is a Lyon & Healy made in Chicago. They call it Model 23. And I got that harp about 48 years ago.
Wow.
So she has served me well. One of the issues that we have now is that we are not in the hall like we used to be. I used to move the harp into the hall in September and take it out in May. And then I'd use another harp owned by the orchestra for the runouts and things like that. But now we're in and out of Hawaii Theater. We're in and out of other places to rehearse. We're in and out of the concert hall once in a while. But then it was shut down for a couple of years, and that's going to happen again. It's just a lot to move a 90-pound instrument out of the house into the van, out of the van into the concert hall or wherever we are.
Yeah, it's a bit of an ordeal.
It is a bit of an ordeal, yeah. My husband and I are tired.
I don't blame you. It is a large instrument.
Yes, and it's always that unknown, who you're going to bump into on the street. We're trying to unload at Hawaii Theater. We'd have to block traffic, and somebody wants to come and help, but their help sometimes is a danger. So we really want to just do it ourselves.
Because you...
We know.
You know, yeah. The ins and outs. Talk about your first harp.
My first harp. I wanted to play harp when I was very little, about 2-3 years old. But the ruling idea at that time was that harpists had to have a piano background because the music looked similar. You learned your keys and your sharps and flats. And so it aided the harp teacher's work if the little student learning already understood about piano music. So my teacher in Allentown had the requirement of 5 years of piano. So I started in second grade, and my parents kept telling me, we can't afford a harp, we can't afford a harp. Although they're the ones that started the interest,
interest, right? Yes.
But they didn't realize how expensive it would be. And lessons were expensive, too. Eventually, in seventh grade, they cashed in their insurance policies and bought this harp at the Lyon & Healy Salon in New York City that was in pieces.
Wow.
They took my dad in the back room, showed it to him, and he was very mechanically minded. And he could see the potential, even though they're like 2,000 moving parts. He could visualize what they were trying to do and rejuvenating. This harp was built in 1920. Then that Christmas, there was a harp next to the Christmas tree.
Oh, my gosh.
And I started lessons with my teacher in January. So,
wow. Do you remember that morning when you
came down? I remember going to Allentown, how excited I was. It was about an hour away. There was no teacher in Reading at the time. And I was very excited. And she had music for me, books, beginning books. And at that time, we went every week just so I wouldn't get any bad habits. But eventually, it became very wearing every week to travel that distance. So she agreed, since I was doing well, to give me a double lesson every other week.
Wow.
So we went every other week, and I had an hour and a half lesson.
But that just helped to nurture your passion for this harp.
She had been in touch with my parents before they bought the harp, and so she encouraged them to take the risk that if I really wanted it, I would get scholarships to school and I would be able to earn money to help out with the finances. Because in addition to just buying the instrument, we have to keep it in strings. And strings are rather expensive too. They were right. She was right. I got a full tuition scholarship to Eastman School of Music, and I worked my way through school with extra gigs, or if an orchestra called Eastman and said, "We need a harpist for the Brockport Orchestra. Do you have somebody to send?" I would go and get paid. So it was financially a good idea for Mother and Daddy to do that, but risky.
Yeah, but do you remember, though, coming down and seeing that harp under the tree?
I remember. Our dog was very excited about it because it was this big thing in the living room. And once I started practicing, she would just be underneath the bench right by the back of the harp. And she'd stay there the whole time I was practicing.
It has such an angelic sound.
I think it's soothing even to the dogs. It's a soothing sound. And because we rest the harp on our chests and on our knees, we really feel those vibrations that we're making, and it is soothing.
And gosh, as your career then with the Honolulu Symphony Orchestra draws to a close this year, you're still going to teach?
I am going to play, yeah. I'm just not doing symphony, opera, and ballet. Those are the three biggies in what I have to prepare for. And I'll do the funerals at church or at the mortuary or wherever it's called for. I've done a variety of places. And weddings and parties. Just did a graduation party the other week. So that was very nice. Yeah, because it is quieter music. Sometimes they don't want the pumping bass. They want it more quiet. So.
Yeah, chamber music.
Yeah, chamber music for one.
I think just the love of music is just a wonderful gift that we can give our children. You give them a gift for life.
I think that's true. And I know that was a big part of the symphony program in the past. We had an education director. And at one point, we would have, in a season, 100,000 kids coming in and out of the concert hall for youth concerts. And we traveled to the neighbor islands and did concerts there. Big Island, we did like residencies two times a year. So that's difficult since we don't have the funding that we used to have anymore. But a lot of the kids don't have music in their schools either. So they're really missing that music input.
And your children got your love for music.
I'm afraid they did. Our daughter Rebecca is our oldest, and she plays piano, and she has played harp and organ, but piano is her main instrument, and she's a public school music teacher in Modesto, California. Our son Stephen played trumpet for several years at Iolani School, but then when he left Iolani, he retired the trumpet.
Okay.
And Kirk played clarinet for several years at Epiphany School and at Iolani. But then I think sports took a little bit more of an interest for him, but they still appreciate the music and enjoy coming to concerts. And they were listening to me practice in utero. So for their whole lives, they've been used to hearing music.
So do you still have that original harp?
I do, although she's had to have some work done on it through no fault of my own. When I was at Eastman, it was shipped to a job, and I didn't know it at the time, but they had dropped it off the back of the truck.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, if you mark fragile on something, that's the first thing they'll drop. So I didn't know it. I didn't see damage. But about 4 days later, the curved part of the harp just broke off down.
Like a stress fracture.
That's what happens, like a delayed reaction. Sometimes it's immediate, but that was delayed. So it had to go back to the factory and have major work done. But that initial thing that happened in the 70s is still affecting her now. The sinking of the column into the bass, and she's still struggling with that to this day. But she's got a new neck and a new board. I use her a lot, and she's out and about with me because she is the first harp I ever had.
Yes, you have I'm sentimental.
I'm very sentimental. And she's very easy for me to play. And she has a beautiful sound. And so that's everything I could ask for.
Yeah. And gosh, as you prepare to hang it up with the Honolulu Symphony Orchestra, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, my mother is in Reading, Pennsylvania. It's about an hour away. Actually, we're making an emergency trip on Tuesday. She's 97.
Oh, my gosh.
And struggling with a few issues. So our children have each been there in the last month to visit and help. Because of the symphony schedule, I didn't feel that I could go at that point, but they went, so that was an amazing thing. And Glenn and I can go Tuesday. Oh. We'll be there about a week. Then I have to come back because there's more symphony work.
Yeah, I don't know when you told your mom about you hanging it up with the symphony, the fact that your whole career has been built around this instrument, that they sacrifice so much.
And my whole schedule has been built around the symphony schedule. So any trip to Pennsylvania or any family trip that we did when the kids were young, they were 1, 3, and 5 when I auditioned for the orchestra. There were a lot of adjustments for the family as I had that schedule that was not wavering. I had to be there. The harp had to be there.
Yeah.
Sometimes I missed basketball games, baseball games, piano programs, school concerts, but that's what has to happen.
So does your mom have a favorite song that you play for her on the harp?
Yeah, mother and dad both like specific pieces that I played, and I do play that. I have played that for her in the past. There's not going to be a harp there this year. I don't have a harp in Pennsylvania anymore. She can imagine it on a recording or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that just must be so meaningful, knowing that they helped nurture this little spark.
I think it has been very meaningful to them, and that's why I know she and Dad passed away around 11 years ago. They would have wanted me to see this 44th season through, after all the years of work and effort that went into it. They wouldn't have wanted me to go to Pennsylvania. So, yeah, but now I will have more freedom in my traveling because I can go to Pennsylvania anytime but winter. We're really not interested in driving in the snow and ice anymore.
Yeah, we certainly thank you for what you've done for our music community over the years.
It's been a pleasure, really. When I look back at all these years of the commitment I made to the orchestra and the commitment that my husband made to making it possible so I could have the time to practice. He'd take care of the children so I could practice. There was a huge commitment for everybody, and I'm so appreciative, but I wouldn't change anything about it.
We've been hearing from Kane Uwejio, who at the time of our interview was set to retire from the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra after 44 years. This interview originally aired earlier this spring, and Uwejio was recognized at HSO's Masterworks Concert Finale on June 15th. She played through the rest of the season, which ended in August. And we should note that the symphony is holding auditions in Honolulu for a principal harpist November 10th to the 12th. Harp music has a soothing quality about it. Ruth Friedman believes in harp for healing. We first met Ruth because she spent a decade at Kalaupapa tending to Hansen's disease patients after being recruited from a world away. She was a nurse living in Israel when Hawaii came calling to recruit the doctor whose office she worked in. She opted to leave Israel to head to the remote settlement, and she says the doctor followed later. And yes, she brought her harp. Among the Hansen's disease patients she tended to included well-recognized storyteller and poet Makia Malo. Friedman has fond memories of Malo, and residents knew her by her nickname, Rudy Tootie. Friedman talks about her love of the harp and her wonderful memories of Kalaupapa.
It is the most healing of any instrument, and this is from Arthur Harvey, a professor in music therapy at UH. He says, "Why is it so therapeutic? Because of its resonance. the resonance from its deep sound body.
Now, you were a nurse at Kalaupapa, and you brought your harp with you.
Yes. It's my furniture. It follows me everywhere. It really is. It's my treasure, and it's my distraction, and I only picked it up in college.
So you were able to play this harp for the residents there at Kalaupapa?
Correct. But the one thing is that it was the sister who played the organ, and I think it helped me get that job. So they put it into the church, and the sister there would have me accompany whatever they were doing for the choir, a beautiful choir of the patients. In Latin, they couldn't change because so many patients had become blind. So it was sort of known as the last Latin mass in Hawaii. And this is where I played. But once I heard a black man singing. He wasn't black, but the medicine turned his skin dark. And he was just singing, "Nobody knows the trouble I've seen." So I took him, walked him over to the church. The harp had just come in. And I sat him down, and I asked him to sing it, and I played with the harp. Thank goodness I had that in my little notebook. Resonant, so heartfelt, and the height of the little church there, St. Francis Church, was so much that it carried everything, and he just sang with all his heart, and then we made a little program that I recorded the next day, and also so that he could sort of recover in between songs, I would play a solo, so it's every other one, but I think we have five of his songs.
That was harpist and retired nurse Ruth Friedman. She shared that Makiu Malo was the first college graduate from Kalaupapa and had traveled to Rome for the canonization of Father Damien and then Mother Marian Cope. He died in 2021, just shy of his 87th birthday. And Friedman recalls when she first arrived in Kalaupapa in the 1980s, there were 120 patients. Today, there are just six. If you're just joining the conversation, you're listening to a Hanaho Music Show. We are showcasing interviews that we've done with musicians celebrating their harps. Coming up, a Grammy-nominated harpist talks about her approach to improvisation. Stay with us. We'll be right back after the break.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from PAR Hawaii, committed to meeting the energy needs of Hawaii and supporting community nonprofit organizations across the islands. Learn more at parhawaii.com.
Join us on Saturday, October 4th at 2 p.m. for an intimate event from HPR's Live from the Atherton and The Moth. Learn more about crafting your story from director and producer of The Moth, Michelle Jalowski. Seating in our Atherton studio is limited. Tickets are available at hprtickets.org.
Support for HPR comes from Big Island Coffee Roasters La Piha Makahiki, a 100% ka'u blend with notes of strawberry jam, brown sugar, and sweet lime at BigIslandCoffeeRoasters.com or at their cafe in Hilo.
Earlier, we featured a conversation with Kani Uegio, the principal harpist from the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra. Next, we hear from another musician with a similar passion for the string instrument. The Doris Duke Foundation recently honored a number of creatives with a $500,000 award for their artistry. One of the awardees is Grammy-nominated jazz harpist Brandi Younger. Younger released a new album in June titled Gadabout Season. We connected with her to talk about her love of the harp. She says she picked up the instrument when she was about 11 years old.
It's something I just did. I played flute, and there was a woman at my dad's job who played harp, and my parents said, hey, our daughter's musical. Can we bring her over? So we played little flute and harp duets. She mentioned to my parents that she knew of a teacher who worked well with kids, and if I took the instrument up, I could probably get a scholarship. So, you know, parents are like, what? Scholarship? Ha ha. So I thought I was taking the easy way out because I knew that if I took the instrument, I'd have to let go of sports because I couldn't do both. And I was sick of getting up to be at swim practice at 5 a.m. in the morning. So I went with harp thinking this would be easier than swimming. Little did I know. I think the harp just took over my life after that. I obviously continued to play through high school at home. Eventually, we got a harp at school. And then somewhere in high school is where my dad got me an Alice Coltrane CD. He said, listen to this. So that's where I started to really hear, like, okay, this is a harp, like, really cool in the context of a harp, you know, of a rhythm section. I never really heard a harp with bass and drums like this. So mm-hmm. I said, this is cool. I think I want to try this one day. But I studied classical music through undergrad and graduate school. However, I always sort of had a second life, as I call it, playing music that I felt like playing. Early on, my mom was like, you have to play pieces that people know. You know, whenever we'd go out and play these events, these local community events, I would play what I was working on. And it's like, hey, mommy, I spent 6 months working on this piece. I'm going to play this piece. So we negotiated, and I'd play the piece I was working on, and then I'd play like a more popular piece or something that sounded recognizable. So that's sort of what I did all through my childhood and high school. And my teacher was really great. As long as I did what was in my method book, she would write out lead sheets for me to play whatever pop music I felt like playing. It also made me feel a little bit more normal because a little weird because I'm playing the harp and kids are looking at me like, why do you have a harp? Because school didn't offer the harp. So that's kind of the whole story. And I kept this sort of double life going through college, through graduate school. It wasn't really until my second year of graduate school that I started to sort of blend my worlds together with all the orchestral work I was doing and then all the other work that I was doing. I was playing pop sessions, and I loved playing the pop sessions. And then I was starting to do little teeny jazz, like little cafes, and I would do just like harp, bass, and flute. It was still very chamber music-y, but I was playing standards too, and I was sort of blending the genres. So that's really how it all happened.
Well, you know, I think the harp is a pretty magical instrument, and when you think of classical music, it's very structured. And yet with jazz, you know, you riff, man, you just take it to new levels. And so, you know, the fact that you've been able to do this with this instrument is really remarkable. And so you've won some pretty nice awards recently.
No major complaints. Are you going to make me list them?
Yes, please.
So as you know, most recently, I am recipient of the Doris Duke Artist Award, which is really, really humbling. People keep asking, like, oh my gosh, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I'm like, leave me alone. Leave me alone. So that is really exciting. And that's something that I had to hold on to for a long time. You know, they told you the news and we couldn't tell anyone. So it gave a lot of time to really think about it and really take it in. But last year I did win an NAACP Image Award. And the year before that, I won Downbeat. Actually, maybe 3 years, I won the Downbeat Critic Poll. And then I was also nominated for a Grammy 2022, which was really exciting. And that was for Best Instrumental Composition.
And I understand that you have an album coming out.
I have a new album coming out on June 13th this month, and it's called Gadabout Season.
And so tell us, what can we expect?
You can expect a more creative instrumental album from me than in the past. It is kind of really personal and really ties together just kind of like, I think, relatable stories of just life and life kind of having its ebbs and flows and just finding a thread of joy throughout the whole process.
Well, what was it like putting this together?
It hurt. So I had to isolate myself and go upstate New York and start to write the music. So it was therapeutic. Also, we took a long time to do it. So I wrote the music. That was really me processing just some rough times in life. And then we recorded it at home, which gave us time to really dig into it, re-record, listen back, make adjustments. That process I'm not used to. I'm used to a one and done, very New York City. You book the studio for 3 days, you record it, bang, you're done. This didn't happen that way, recording it at home, so we had so much time, and that is what made it painful for me because I'm so used to just being done with it. It was revisiting, adjusting, and really kind of forcing me to sit with it in a way that I'm not accustomed to.
It's kind of like a term paper, right? The torture of putting it together.
Totally.
As you reflect on your journey from a classical musician and then, you know, now to messing around with jazz, any words of advice to any of the young and upcoming budding musicians out there?
I do. You know, between what I always tell my students and my career, but also I just came back from the International Harp Competition and I started to really think about this. I'm glad that you asked me. It's really, really, really important to listen to, absorb, and transcribe different types and different styles of music, because the more flexible of a player you are, the better a musician you are, also the more marketable you'll be, meaning in terms of being able to do what you want. Some people do not want to play in an orchestra. Some people want to play in an orchestra, but there just aren't many orchestral jobs, and so you may have to get a different kind of job playing, but the more that you're able to do, the better off you'll be. And I think that is the biggest lesson that I just repeat a million times over and over again. Be flexible. Don't worry about what other people think so much. Learn as much as you can, because the more tools you have in your toolbox, the more you'll be able to just create whatever it is you want to.
That was Brandi Younger, Grammy-nominated jazz harpist, whose interview originally aired this past June. Her new album, Gadabout Season, has garnered rave reviews from the New York Times and NPR's All Songs Considered. She was featured on the program Fresh Air in September. You can listen to tracks on her website, brandiyounger.com. Dug back into our archives for this next segment. It was almost a decade ago that the Conversation's Chris Vandercook sat down with Megan Bledsoe Ward, a Honolulu-based harpist, composer, and arranger who came on the show to talk about her group's debut album, Pacific Harp Project.
The harp is one of those instruments whose full capabilities have yet to be explored, too often relegated to the dreamy arpeggios most of us associate with it. That shimmer that it does so well can become a unique jazz voice, Megan Bledsoe Ward is out to change our perception of her instrument of choice with her new CD, The Pacific Harp Project. She's on the line from her studio. Good morning, Megan.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Unusual. I mean, you've heard this a million times. It's an unusual choice of an instrument for jazz.
It is, yeah, but it's not as uncommon as one would think. There are a lot of jazz harpists out there who are doing really amazing things. And I've chosen a slightly different path from those people based on the way the harp is constructed. It makes a lot of jazz repertoire really difficult on the instrument. And so what I've done for this group is I've actually taken traditional classical harp repertoire and adapted it to a jazz quartet so we can improvise over it and collaborate with it and really explore the repertoire in a new and exciting way.
When you say it's a difficult instrument for the traditional jazz repertoire, are you talking about the kind of fast runs and interval leaps that you run into in jazz tunes?
Actually, no. I'm really referring to the harmonic changes. The harp looks and sounds like this really beautiful and simple, elegant instrument, but actually it's technically pretty complicated. The strings are laid out like the white keys of the piano, which is all well and good. People talk about it as being kind of a naked piano or a right-side-up piano. But the problem with that, of course, is that we don't have access to any of the black notes. We actually move pedals with our feet to change the pitch of each string so that they can be either flat, natural, or sharp, depending on where the pedals are set.
And with a lot of jazz melodies, you'd be stomping on those pedals until you were blue in the face.
That's right. That's right. It's pretty counterintuitive to be able to move in that way.
So by taking melodies that are already comfortable for the instrument, do you then improvise from the chordal background of the tune, or what's your basis for the improvisation that follows?
Yes, exactly. Some of the tunes, I take the chordal harmonic moves that are already present in the piece, and I expand them, so we improvise over them. For some of the pieces, I've written in more free-form improvisation sections, so I can explore what the composer has done to write the piece, whether it's using different melodic techniques or different kinds of writing for the harp that may line up with the harmonies, or mm-hmm. they may be completely separate. And so it really takes a special group of people, which luckily I have, to be able to really listen to each other and explore those kinds of things, even though they're not the traditional way that we improvise over music.
We've all heard kind of jazz improvisation where if it's strictly based on the chord changes, sometimes you get the feeling that the melody ended and then all of a sudden there's something that doesn't necessarily connect.
That's right.
There's a trick to making your improvisation flow out of what has preceded it.
Absolutely. And it's kind of the role of the other people in the group to help the improviser come up with great ideas and help develop those ideas. And I'm so lucky to have such great musicians playing with me that they've really helped me to become a better improviser in that way.
Well, I know that you're playing with Noel Okimoto playing his vibes, and that gives you two instruments that put a very sort of a shimmering high overtones flying around in the air.
That's right. And it works really well to have the vibraphone on the harp because the sound of the attack of each note is so different that it doesn't become as muddy as I've encountered in other situations when maybe I'm playing with a piano or a guitar and we both serve the same roles. And so it's difficult to differentiate between the two instruments. But with vibraphone, we can really trade off roles or play the same role, and there's no confusion as to who's doing what. It's a really nice combination.
Yeah, I would think that with guitar it would be difficult because, of course, stringed instruments have their characteristic decay of the notes, right?
Exactly.
As soon as the note is sounded, it starts to die off, and that's tricky for a guitar player as well. But the way vibraphone notes hang in the air would be a very distinct sound.
Yes, and it's really beautiful.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, some of the things that you've chosen, some of the pieces you've chosen, and the fact that you're proceeding out of classical music inevitably reminds me of John Lewis and the Modern Jazz Quartet and the kind of things they did.
Yes, absolutely. Hugely inspiring.
So that's the kind of repertoire you're working with. And you have also bass and drums, and what kind of role do they play interacting with you? Is that mainly a support role, or is it a kind of four-way conversation?
Well, kind of both. Actually, traditionally, they can be very supportive and just hold down the rhythm section for us. But the musicians that we have playing are so sensitive in their playing, and they're such great listeners and interactors that they're both very melodic and musical in their playing, and they really contribute a lot to the overall tone of each piece.
That was harpist Megan Bledsoe Ward and retired HBR host Chris Vandercook. That interview originally aired in November of 2015. Bledsoe Ward has been described by Downbeat magazine for her scintillating plays of light and subtle colors. Her group's debut album, Pacific Harp Project, won the 2016 Nahoku Hanohano Award for Instrumental Album of the Year. Their most recent album was released back in 2019 and is titled Play. Hawaii Youth Symphony has had a busy 60th anniversary season. Student musicians played alongside the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra earlier this year in a side-by-side concert at the orchestra's Beethoven Festival. We looked at our own rosters and found four former members of the Youth Symphony on our staff here at HPR. Government reporter Ashley Mizuo, Director of Operations and Systems Crystal Spear, Classical Pacific host Shireen Lumtaba, and Kanikapila Sunday host Louise King Lanzalotti. Lanzalotti played the cello in the very first iteration of the Youth Symphony. Lumtaba was a harpist, while Mizuo and Spear both sat in the wind section playing oboe. The Conversation's Maddie Bender brought all four of them into the studio to reminisce on their orchestra days.
My first question, and I'll start with you, Luis, is why you decided to join in the first place, whether it was your parents or yourself, kind of what your origin story was.
I was in orchestra, and my conductor, Mr. Mesrobian, was also the conductor of Youth Symphony. And in 1962, I don't think he had enough strings. So he took us little eighth graders, or seventh, I'm not sure what, and he put us in the back stand. It was such a great thing to do. So he talked me into it. It wasn't hard. I loved it.
Shireen, you go next.
Mr. Miyamura was the conductor, and he asked me to join. And it was really a great decision. I don't know what I'd be doing. My life really kind of took a path from that moment. And I'm so grateful to Mr. Miyamura and the Youth Symphony. I still to this day play in orchestras, and I'm a little better, not much better, sometimes worse, but it is still fun. It is still the best seat in the house.
Ashley?
Yeah, I started in HYS because, well, I had auditioned a few times before I got in. Actually, I would just always completely just crumble under the pressure during auditions. And so I had auditioned a couple of times, and I finally got in my junior year of high school. And a lot of it was due to our teacher, Miss Ochi Onishi, who really pushed me and really made me the best player I could be at the time.
Your music teachers keep coming up that they were so instrumental.
Yeah, Miss O is like second mother, yes. I think, to like most oboe players in Hawaii, I would say. And even my younger brother, he's 6 years younger than me, he came up with Miss O as well. And she's just been such an important part of our lives.
Crystal, what about you? I also had the Miss O special. I started taking lessons from her in sixth grade when I started playing oboe. And she, I think, still is, and at the time was the YS2, one of the YS2 conductors. So I auditioned for HYS, I think, when I was a freshman in high school, and I got into CO. So it was a couple years till I was actually in her orchestra. But one of the CO conductors was my middle school band director. So sort of like both sides, I had teachers and leaders who were encouraging me to join. And so it was just like a natural progression of the band kid experience.
I'm wondering, does anyone remember their audition piece?
Definitely blacked that one out. It was just kind of like an intimidating experience because you would go in and then there would be like the two or three judges and their backs are faced to you. And then they would have like sometimes a screen, but they would instruct you to be like completely silent because they don't want to know who's playing, except a lot of them were like our teachers. So they probably knew exactly who the person was that was playing. Yeah. And it was just really, I would always just get so nervous before them.
To me, there's something so special about having that audition experience as a young person, because we do a lot of scary things, a lot of auditions as adults, but getting that experience in a low stakes environment seems like it could be, yeah, a real educational experience. So Ashley, talk a little bit more about the role that that played in your development.
Yeah, I actually think that out of everything, I mean, obviously the music was like a huge part of it, but another big part of it was definitely that kind of character building. That was kind of my first exposure ever to doing something really intimidating, that you have all the nerves, you're scared, and sometimes you have to be in front of a lot of people. And that's really translated, I think, to my career today here at Hawaii Public Radio as a news reporter, taking those chances, those risks, and being able to use your voice and stand up. The foundation of that was really rooted in my time in band and orchestra and doing those HYS auditions, as well as practicing and all of that. Really just lays the foundation, I think, to really build your character at a very young age.
Yeah, I feel like I have to say this one time that music and the whole band experience is probably the most formative thing I did as a kid. Yeah, like Ashley said, I feel like that experience definitely molded my character and work ethic and ability to get along with other people and form relationships. And so it's a huge, huge experience for young people, I think.
Shireen and Luis, I wonder how the two of you feel hearing Ashley and Crystal talk about something that, I mean, decades after you both were a part of it, does it seem like they had similar experiences?
Well, first of all, listening to them is making me nervous.
I have like pre-concert jitters.
Well, you know what's different? As a string player, you play in a section. So the experience of a wind player with solo parts is such a different, it's a different world. And for us to hear that is amazing, right? As string players.
Well, you know, I hear a lot of differences because when I was in Youth Symphony, there was only one orchestra. And once you got in, you were in, but you did have to audition each year for seating. And I would agree with everything Shireen said, except that in the string sections, if you were in the first chair, you had a lot of responsibility, which was really, really important. It was good for us. It made us more responsible. We had to go and correct the bowings and everything. And also, I was a cellist. I didn't mention that. So Mr. Mesrobian used to let me conduct sometimes when he went back to listen, you know, to listen to all the sound, because I told him I wanted to be a conductor. And in those days, girls, you know, like girls didn't be conductors, but he would let me do that. And so it gave me so much more confidence. And to this day, it's the only kind of music that doesn't make me nervous. I hated performing. I loved cello, but I hated performing. But conducting, not even get nervous, and you're hearing all this music all over the place, and it's just fun.
Are there particular pieces that any of you remember playing? We can go around. Let's start, Louise.
Absolutely. I fell in love with Beethoven when I was in orchestra, and we played the first and last movements of Beethoven's Fifth. We did really excellent music, but also the variety of music that we were exposed to was very useful for later. It made me sort of almost a step up when I went to music school. I'd already done a lot of the orchestral music, history. I knew a lot of the composers, but Beethoven, just, I fell in love with Beethoven.
I do remember we played the William Tell Overture. We also, I don't know if it was the same year or a different year, we played the New World Symphony by Dvorak. And I only remember these pieces because there are oboe or English horn solos, and those are the only pieces that I remember because they were important to me. I do remember also that Mr. Elton Masaki in YS2 always picked fun pieces in addition to like the very classical pieces. So I think one year we did like a Legend of Zelda music.
Oh, that's awesome.
Piece, or like we did like a Super Mario like video game piece as well. And so those are fun too.
I don't know. When you think about young people listening to classical music, there isn't always that sense of excitement or fun. But when you're in that setting with other young people, it feels differently than when you're in the backseat of a car with your grandparents and they're listening to the classical radio station.
Yeah, because it is different playing it rather than, I think personally, I would not listen to classical music now or at all if I had not been a part of the orchestra. You just learn to hear things in a different way. You can identify the different instruments. You can be like, I played this before, or I played this composer before, and I can hear these things. But yeah, what really makes it special now for me is listening back to maybe a piece that I played in HYS and remembering the experience and like that feeling of like working so hard with all these other young people towards this common goal and having this finished product that you all do together. It's like such a special thing.
I felt like that music was ours when we practiced it, you know, and it's still mine. You know, it feels like I was in high school in the 80s, and this is, I am a Sony Walkman person back then. And on my tape would be like the Beatles, it would be Michael Jackson, and be Bach, you know, and it was all like the soundtrack to my teen years. And so, yeah, I was a really awesome teenager.
Shireen and Luis, you both are music hosts. Are there definite points where, like, oh, your understanding or appreciation of classical music from orchestra ends and your day job begins, or did they all kind of flow along the same river?
Yeah, it's all the same. And I have to say, I listen to music until going to bed, and then it's the first thing I do in the morning, and it's what we talk about when we're eating. And I think music has been a really the heartbeat of my life. Yeah.
One more go around. I want an anecdote or a moment, just something from your time in the orchestra.
For a little while, I was in the front stand, and Mr. Mesrobian would be conducting. And when we were playing certain music, the cello part was not always that interesting. So I would start filling in the notes and sort of improvising and fooling around. And I just remember him just side-eye looking down. He didn't say, stop it. He just looked down and he kind of like, hmm. And then he went back up like, I hear you.
I guess the main one that comes to mind, and this isn't necessarily during the time that I was in HYS, but it was when I went to Pacific Music Institute, which is their summer program. You would get to do like an ensemble performance with just your section. And so just be like actually like 15 oboe players and like three people playing English horn. And you would play these pieces that were, I don't know where Miss O would find them, but one of them I just remember so specifically was a Journey medley, and Journey's like her favorite. And so I just remember 15 oboes playing this Journey medley, which is so crazy, but that's just like one of my favorite moments, I think, of high school, honestly.
Glee could never.
They could never.
My first day of youth symphony, we didn't have a car to transport the harp. But my Uncle Gus was a yard man. So for those Sundays, we would stand the harp on the back of his pickup truck alongside with his lawnmower and rubbish cans. And this was before the advent of bungee cord. I don't know, but it was tied with a rope. And I mean, we came from Pearl City all the way to UH on a Sunday, which is a busy day for yard men, right? But he took off those days. And so my dad and my uncle would like carry the harp in. We didn't have a cart. We were so ill-equipped for classical presentation. And then we're all sitting, the three of us, in that seat, right, of the pickup truck. And what an experience. And then the first day, Mr. Miyamura said,
I want to tell you that Shireen Lum arrived in a pickup truck that had a lawnmower in it. Oh, my gosh. And I sit in the back of the orchestra, like teenage me was back there, and then all the faces turn to look at, like, who came in a what? Oh, my gosh. It's amazing. I showed up the next week. It was so embarrassing. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that families and parents do of athletes and musicians. And it really takes not only the organization and those teachers, but those families that sign up for that and show up. It's really heartwarming that it's continued.
And yet you still married a bass player.
It continues.
Yeah, well, Uncle doesn't drive us around anymore. Thanks, Uncle.
Just love that segment. We were hearing from HBR's Ashley Mizuo, Crystal Spear, Louise Lanzalotti, and Shireen Tamba. They were talking about their time in the Hawaii Youth Symphony with our executive producer and clarinetist, Maddie Bender. That does it for us for today's special showcase highlighting the dulcet tones of the harp. We would like to hear from you. You can call our talkback line and leave us your comments. Here's the number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can listen back to our shows on the conversation page of our website or as a podcast on Spotify or Apple. Our program is produced by Maddie Bender, Lillian Song, and D.W. Gibson, with support from Savannah Harriman Pote and the HPR Digital team. The Backyard Quiz theme was written for us by John DeMello, the music courtesy of Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up the conversation.